hopefully I'll be able to. If I can't, we'll put off part of it until we meet again next week. Is that fair? Even at that, I'm not going to cover everything that the Bible has to say about our response to evil. But we'll only scratch the surface and hopefully we'll begin to think about some of these things. They are critically important to us because, well, quite frankly, we all know that evil is out there. We know that it's everywhere. Sometimes we like to think that it's only in foreign countries. It's in places where there are really ugly situations that take place. But it exists even here. We don't have to look very far to know that there are evil men, even here in America. And when we encounter that evil, if we try to respond absent God, we only have access to a very few methods of responding. There may be war, but these are the ones that strike me. These are the ones that people, generally speaking, use. It may be that we seek revenge or vengeance. I know that that's something that I struggle with. I don't know how many other people struggle with it, but seeking vengeance or revenge is something that weighs heavily upon me. Sometimes we disguise revenge or vengeance as self-defense. Sometimes self-defense is legitimate. Sometimes self-defense is really a response in and of itself, but not always. Sometimes we turn to perhaps passive resistance. We just refuse to acknowledge that there is evil. Sometimes we try to escape. The classic series of experiments that have been done with rats and mice. And, you know, I'm a psychologist, so I had to study about all of that stuff. I even had to do some of that stuff. But when people are faced with evil, one of the things that they do is they try to run. And that makes sense. Sometimes, instead of running, we learn to just be helpless. And we just lay down. If we're convinced that there's nothing that we can do, that's a reasonable response to the violence and the evil that's around us, and so we learn to be helpless. I'm not convinced that those are the only ways that we can respond. I believe that God gives us better responses, and we're going to spend some time talking about the better responses. It's a response that was described in Romans, the 12th chapter, that we've already read this morning. Sometimes the responses from God tend to overlap with some of those things that we talked about that are available to us absent God. But when we talk about those responses absent God, they look very different than when those responses are taken with a view to God. Now I said, this is difficult. This has always been difficult for me. And I know it's difficult for everyone else because nobody has a clear answer about what we're going to do. Romans, the 12th chapter, particularly in verse 17, the writer says, never pay back evil for evil to anyone. That's revenge. That's vengeance. That's something that happens when we don't have God. That's not to say that there is not evil that comes to evil men, but it is to say that our response is not just responding to evil with evil. In 1 Thessalonians, the 5th chapter, verse 15, the Apostle Paul says, "See that no one repays another with evil for evil, but," and this is what happens, when you add God to the picture, and when we practice adding God to the picture, "always seek after that which is good for one another and for all people." When evil comes to evildoers, we view that in terms of good. That's hard. We're gonna try to understand a little bit more about it. Proverbs, the 20th chapter, the wise man said, "Do not say, 'I will repay evil.' Wait for the Lord. He will save you." Matthew, the 5th chapter, and at verse 39, Jesus gives us some information. Jesus says, "Do not resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also." Difficult to understand. Even more difficult to practice, I might point out. 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, and at verse 18, Peter says, to sum it up, "All of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for this very purpose, that you might inherit a blessing." Yes, it's very difficult. Romans, the 12th chapter, at verse 17, as we've already read. Now, beyond just not seeking vengeance, not responding to insult with insult, not responding to evil with evil, we're told that with God, we can go way beyond that. We can actually seek that which is good. Understand, I didn't say this was easy. It's not easy for me. Trust me. If you cut me off on the freeway, I want to respond with evil. If you cut me off on the freeway, it's hard for me to restrain myself. Now, I lived in California. And I'm not talking about restraining yourself because you know that the guy who cut you off might have a gun in his car. And you might respond in an even worse way. What I'm talking about is restraining yourself because you seek that which is good. Romans 17 or 12. "Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. In so doing, you will keep burning coals of fire on his head." Now, sort of store that phrase away, because we're going to circle back to that as we conclude our thoughts on responding to evil. But the apostle concludes, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." Now, what does that exactly look like? Look at Exodus, the 23rd chapter, and at verse 4. "If you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey wandering away, you shall surely return it to him." Now, we're not talking about your best friend that happens to live next door and you see his dog getting out. This is your enemy that lives next door. You see his dog or his donkey or his ass getting out. He says, "Return it to him." This is your enemy. don't just hurry back and say, serves him right. He's a mean old cuss anyway. No wonder his dog ran away. Now that's not responding with evil. I'm not going to shoot his dog. His dog wandered away. I think sometimes I have a tendency to say, I'll just let the dog go. But he says, no, return it to him. If you see the donkey of one who hates you lying helpless under its load, you shall refrain from leaving it to him. You shall surely release it with him. That's hard. 1 Samuel, the 24th chapter, beginning at verse 1. Look at this example. This goes beyond what I can imagine. Saul had returned from pursuing the Philistines. He was told, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness up by En Gedi. Now, David and Saul have been having difficulty getting along together. David essentially is running from Saul because Saul has decided that he's going to kill him. Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all of Israel, went to seek David and his men in front of the rocks of the wild goats. He came to the sheepfolds on the way where there was a cave. Saul went in to relieve himself. David and his men were sitting in the inner recesses of the cave. David was hiding there and Saul didn't know it. The men of David said to him, behold, this is the day that the Lord said to you, behold, I'm about to give your enemy into your hand and you shall do to him as it seems good to you. In other words, we've got it. Go kill Saul. David arose, cut off the edge of Saul's robe secretly. It came about afterward that David's conscience bothered him because he cut off the edge of Saul's robe. So he said to his men, far be it from me because of the Lord that I should do this thing unto my Lord, or because of God that I should do this thing unto Saul, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, since he is the Lord's anointed. David persuaded his men with these words and did not allow them to rise up against Saul. Saul arose, left the cave, went on his way. David didn't lie in ambush. David didn't plot to destroy Saul. Saul was plotting to destroy David. David just happened on this happy circumstance that he could respond. And David didn't. And he also restrained the men that were with him. David had a pretty good handle on this. Much better handle than I do. So let's think about what it means to take vengeance. Vengeance doesn't belong to me. Vengeance belongs to God. It is God's prerogative. Romans, the 12th chapter, at verse 19. God does say, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Now, why in this instance is vengeance warranted? Because it's vengeance with God. Nahum, the first chapter, beginning at verse 1. Nahum gives some of the characteristics of vengeance when it belongs to God. Or some of the characteristics, really, of God. And they are characteristics that guide his exercise. This is the Oracle of Nineveh, Nahum 1. Beginning at verse 6, one of those Old Testament books that we never ever read. That's why it's so hard to find. If your Bible's like mine, probably a lot of the Old Testament pages are still pretty clean. New Testament pages are pretty ratty. because we lick our fingers and turn the pages. The Old Testament, not so much. If you're reading it in your book, in your phone, it doesn't really matter. Nahum, the first chapter, at verse 1. The Oracle of Nineveh, the book of the vision of Nahum, the Elkohite. A jealous and avenging God is the Lord. The Lord is avenging and wrathful. The Lord takes vengeance on his adversaries. He reserves wrath for his enemies. The Lord is slow to anger and great in power. The Lord will by no means leave the guilty unpunished. In a whirlwind and storm in his way, and clouds are the dust beneath his feet. He rebukes the sea, makes it dry. He dries up all the rivers. Bashan and Carmel wither. The blossoms of Lebanon wither. Mountains quake because of him. The hills dissolve. Indeed, the earth is upheaved by his presence. The world and all the inhabitants in it. Who can stand before his indignation? Who can endure the burning of his anger? His wrath is poured out like fire. The rocks are broken up by him. The Lord is good. A stronghold in the day of trouble. And he knows those who take refuge in him. But with an overflowing flood, he will make a complete end of its sight and will pursue the enemies into darkness. There's some things that we can say about God. We know that God is slow to anger. And we know that God knows what's in the heart of man. So not only is God the perfect judge, but he gets to judge based on something that we can't know. So when I say that vengeance, when it's exercised by God, is different than the vengeance that I would exercise, this is just one of the reasons. God knows what's in the heart of man. And God will always judge perfectly based upon that knowledge. I don't have that knowledge, nor does any other man, but God does. Romans, the 13th chapter, and at verse 1, the writer talks about some of the tools that God uses to exercise his vengeance. In Romans 13, he's talking about the government. He says, beginning at verse 1, every person should be subject to the governing authorities. There is no authority except from God, and those that exist are established by God. Therefore, whosoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed shall receive condemnation upon themselves. Rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. They are a cause of fear for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do that which is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid. For it does not bear the sword for nothing. It is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. God can use government to bring vengeance upon the evildoers. And in its ideal function, that's what government does. You ever been driving down the freeway and a guy comes screaming up behind you, rides your back bumper, and then suddenly jerks his car out around you, speeds off in the other lane, and you think, I wish I could respond. And then in the rearview mirror, you see blue, blue, blue. And you think, yes! God has responded. I don't know if you're like me, but I'm glad. when I was an evildoer, and I saw blue, blue, blue in my rearview mirror, I worried about seeing that in my rearview mirror. And yes, I can tell you stories about back when I used to drive like my hair was on fire. And I was the guy that pulled up on your back bumper. So yes, God can use civil government. 1 Peter, the second chapter, beginning verse 13, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as one in authority or to governors as one sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who are right. So not only does God use civil government to respond to the evildoer in the appropriate way, but it encourages us to do what is right. Now that's government that functions the way that God intended for government to function. The next thing that God does is really, in some ways, I guess, kind of sad. God responds to people's evil by just letting them go. When you choose to be evil, eventually you can get to the point that God will not restrain you anymore. And He'll let you do whatever you want to do. Long reading in Romans, the first chapter, beginning at verse 18 and all the way down through the end of the chapter at verse 32. But I just want to note what he says in verse 28. He says, just as they did not like to see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind. It's very difficult for us to imagine a world that is devoid of God. Now, kind of let that sink in for a minute. There are very few places and very few occasions for us to ever see what the world would be like if there were no God. No God at all. I've been in those situations. I've been inside prisons where there is no God. And where men sink to the lowest level to which they can sink. I don't want to go there. Sinking to that level is in itself a punishment for evildoers. And God exercises it. And finally, we know that God is going to come and send you fire, taking vengeance on them that know not God. Our God is righteous. He will hold men to account. And yes, I know God can do that. And I said I had too much to cover this morning. I do. So we're going to stop right there. We're going to take this up again. Next week, we'll keep going, spend some time thinking about this, and if you're visiting with us today and you're not going to get to be here next week, I'm sorry. That's terrible to take you halfway through a discussion and then just kind of abruptly leave it right there, but trust me, the continuing discussion will be worth it. Coming back if you possibly can. Or at least I hope it will. If you are visiting with us and you can't be here next week, you can check out the material that's available on our website. And we do invite you to do that. It's a good way to stay up with all of the things that we're doing. So, bear with me. I'm going to advance through these slides because I can't talk about all of them, but I want to get ready for the song that's coming up. This is the song we're going to sing together, and we can rejoice in what God does for us. So let's do that. If you're a Christian and you have not practice this discipline very well. Ask for God's help. He will help. Tonight we're going to talk about how God helps. If you've never known God, unfortunately you're stuck, because the things that we're talking about are things that you can't do unless you have God in your life. If you want to put God in your life because these things appeal to you, then do that. Put Him on in baptism. Walk with Him. That's the wonderful blessing that God makes available to us. We want to help you to do that. We have a pool of water back here. We can baptize you this morning. It may be that 3 o'clock in the morning you decide you want to be baptized. Call somebody, say something, and we'll meet you and baptize you then. It may be that Thursday afternoon you decide that you'd like to do something to put on Christ. Call somebody, we'll meet you, we'll baptize you then. Doesn't have to be in this pool of water, but this pool of water back here is warm. I baptize people in ponds in the wintertime. That's not fun. But we have a warm pool of water back here that's prepared. We want you to think about it. And just for a moment, will you think what a grand thing it is to have God in your life, to be able to practice these kinds of spiritual disciplines? You can't get to these spiritual disciplines if you don't have God. So what we're talking about is the best thing that could possibly happen to you. Let's think about that. And if we can help, let us know. We're going to stand and we're going to sing the song together.